Welcome to the Diversity Gap Podcast, where we are exploring the gap between good intentions and good impact as it relates to diversity, equity, and inclusion. My name is Bethany Wilkinson, and I am your host. Okay, cool. Well, this is fun. I haven't been at the mic in a long time.
Yeah, me either.
Oh, yeah.
Longer than you.
I know, it's true. Hey, friends. Hey, listeners. Bethany Wilkinson here with my friend, new co-host of the Diversity Gap Podcast, Kayla Stagnaro.
Hello. What's up?
Oh, this is so great. I know we're going to get into like, who's Kayla? What's she about? Like, what is she up to? Or who is she? Or all those things a little later. But to kick us off, Kayla, how's it going?
Man, today is going well. You know, I feel like it's kind of like a normal week. I mean, normal, new normal, whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
It feels like, yeah, it feels like a good day. I feel like people are excited about like early voting. Mm-hmm. And yeah, how's it going for you today?
Good. Good. I kind of want to change up something in our plan. Can you share like a little bit about who you are? I know we're going to get into more like purpose and why you feel inclined to be on this podcast of all of, you know what I'm saying? But
yes.
Like, tell the people who you are, what makes you, what do you love, just general stuff.
All right. Well, you know, I love being put on the spot. So I am here today because Bethany's been asking me to do this for over a year.
Yeah,
maybe 2 years.
Almost 2 years, I think.
And so that's why I'm, one of the main reasons why I'm here, but I'm really excited to get into, just all the different things we've been learning together and separately and processing. But I've been on the plywood team for 5 years now. Mm-hmm. I am a mom of two. I'm married, I guess been married almost 9 years.
To our high school sweetheart. Isn't that great?
It's very true. We've been together since we were 15, which is kind of fun. And yeah, I live in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I just love being outside. That's like what we do on the weekend is, during the week is we just spend so much time outside, whether it's in our front yard or jumping on the trampoline in the backyard or just taking walks with my family. And yeah, like one of the things I really like love about what I do in my day-to-day job is I get to work with so many different people, like whether it's the people on my team or the people in our community here at Plywood, and help them make their ideas come to life. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely like an operator. I love to get things done, create systems. I'm like, yeah, I love being productive, maybe too much. But yeah, that's a part of like what I do, but also what I enjoy doing.
Yeah, it's a real gift because I mean, the diversity gap wouldn't exist without you. I mean, I just even think of those early meetings where it's like, Kayla, I have a million things to do. I have one day a week to do this. Please help me organize my calendar for the next 4 to 6 months. And you're so great at helping us do that. So this whole podcasting thing is new because Kayla's used to being behind the scenes.
Yes, and so, for sure.
So to have her voice like be one of, I don't know, authority and responsibility and all of those things is, it's new, but I'm really pumped.
Yeah. Thanks for having me here.
Oh, and then real quick, how do you racially identify? I know for people who don't know that.
I am a white woman and I use she and her. And yeah.
Awesome. So let's talk about summer 2020.
Yes.
Because we're now almost to the end of October or mid-October, I guess. But June, May, June, July, August were insane.
Yeah.
On so many levels. I know for me, really personally, like, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, like incredibly exhausting and miserable and hard. the pandemic. Oh my gosh. I haven't talked about that really.
It really goes back to March.
Yeah.
If we include the pandemic for sure.
So true.
Yeah.
So I don't know, Kayla, how have you experienced this year? And then even this summer and just, you know, the death of Ahmaud Arbery and George Floyd, Breonna Taylor. I know more things have developed in those cases over time, but not cases. Like, these are real people and their stories. So
I think for me at first, too, it was really hard to accept the whole pandemic thing. For some reason, I really thought it would be over in 2 weeks. I know we talked about this a good bit, like 2 weeks, maybe another week or so. And so when I really started to settle into such uncertainty of like timing and not knowing what was going to be happening next, I was struggling with a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, there's like the Ahmaud Arbery case, then George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Tony McDade, Toy Salu, and then Rayshard Brooks mm-hmm. here in Atlanta. Things started to feel really heavy really quickly. And I think there were days that it was really hard to get out of bed. And there were days that were filled with lots of tears. And there were days that I was really mad at my white friends for finally showing up. Mm. There are days that I had just the right amount of words and days where I had like no words. I think it was strange too, because our team is so used to working closely together and we were kind of separated, at least at the beginning half till, I don't know, mid-May or so. And so I feel like our team was carrying all these different things in different ways. And it was hard for us to all be connecting on personal level and a work level. It was really heavy mm-hmm. and hard. And it still is. That's why at the beginning I was like, yeah, today's a good day. But yeah, I think as the summer's gone on and we're getting closer to the election and everything just feels very like tumultuous.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah. It's really interesting because like when I think of this summer, I'm learning this about myself in general because I've been in this season of like growing in self-awareness and trying to become a healthy person. But one of my tendencies when I'm overwhelmed, anxious, depressed even, is to start working more. Mm. And so even when I think about like, I think it was the week, maybe the week or so after the Ahmaud Arbery story surfaced, my knee-jerk reaction was like, I've got to double down, design a curriculum and launch something tomorrow. And part of that was like, the social media environment, right? Like so many other racial justice educators and trainers were like so well positioned to respond to that moment. And I felt that pressure. But it was like this two-sided thing where on one hand, I'm like, yeah, I need to create and hustle and work more. But literally like my emotional world and my physical body were not having it. And so it's like, it's this, I'm exhausted, but I'm not sleeping. I am anxious, depressed, and crying. And I only find relief in escapism activities. And yeah, it was just really, really tough. And then thinking about, and I'm like, the diversity gap as a platform and project is getting all of this attention and I don't know what to do with that. And now I'm freaking out because I feel like I need to go launch a whole organization. I'm also trying to build a house and like all these different things are going on. And yeah, it was just a lot. And then I forgot that there was a pandemic happening. I'm like, oh gosh. Then just like culturally, like society's like freaking out. I mean, none of us know what's happening.
Yep.
And we're all in this like perpetual state of fear and confusion and what is it like ambiguous loss. People started talking about that. I don't even know what that means. But yeah, it was so much.
For sure. And everybody processes things in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I think we all were trying to figure out like what to say and what to do on social media. And I think maybe that speaks a little bit to the ambiguous loss, like that idea of like if you say the right thing or you don't say something. But then all of us just experiencing like loss of opportunities, loss of like being with your team or just like even small things like going on dates. Mm-hmm. Like it's like this constant feeling of like stress, anxiety, and like not being able to do the things you had planned.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It is. Okay. I do want to go back to the social media thing.
Yes.
Because we talked about this.
Yes.
Y'all. And when I say y'all, I'm talking to you, the listeners. Social media is something else.
Like, for sure.
Because it creates, I don't even know. I'm just going to talk about it. So like, it's summer. Things are happening. People who've never thought about racial justice in their life are now posting black squares on Instagram. And it's just like, on one hand, this is great. Everyone should be doing this. Yes, this is what we've been advocating for as racial justice educators for decades, not me personally for decades, but some people for decades, right?
Yeah.
At the same time, it just seems like so insufficient. And so, I don't know, Kayla, how have you been thinking about this and the role of social media and being socially engaged?
I feel like I talked to so many different friends that felt like so stuck and not knowing what to do or what to say. And it's like, oh, can I post just one time? Is that enough? Or do I need to post every single time? And so we've talked about this idea of performative activism. And it's kind of like, I don't know, like surface level. Like, I think in some ways we're probably all guilty of it, but I think we experienced it and saw it so much over the summer where it's like now all of those people who posted for the first time, so many of them are done. Like they've moved on to the next thing or their life is just picked up like normal or whatever. And it I think that part is really hard. Like mm-hmm. today, that's, I think, some of the continued heaviness. Like when I see something else going on in the world that affects me or affects my family, then, you know, how do I engage with it in a healthy way and make sure like the people around me know about it too, so that it doesn't get forgotten mm-hmm. or missed or just ignored.
I have like thoughts on both sides of the spectrum, and maybe this, even some of it speaks to like our us being different racially too. But on one hand, I'm like, I don't care if you post on Instagram. I don't care what race or ethnicity is. Like Instagram, I think it's incredible. It's a great device, a great tool to raise awareness and like move people. And I see its value. But at the end of the day, I'm like, I want people to go talk to their parents and talk to their kids and have like these real conversations with real humans in their real life. Cause I think that's where change actually happens. It doesn't always happen via the screens totally. On our phones. And what's interesting though, is that when people don't post, sometimes I'm like, oh, do they not care? But then also I'm sure there are some people who aren't posting, but they are having hard conversations with their kids.
For sure.
Or their family or friends or whatever. And it's just, maybe the underlying thing is my own tendency to, I want to be able to judge and like figure out who's in, who's out, who's on my side, who's not on my side. And there's a place for that. But it really pushes me to ask myself, like, what is it that I want from white people or from people who aren't having this experience? And I think what I want is for people to like go do their own work. And for some people, the expression of their own work probably does need to be posted on Instagram every day for a long time.
Yeah.
But for other people, it has nothing to do with Instagram. It's about their budget. I'm never going to see their budget. Like, I'm not the person to hold them accountable to that. But
right.
That's what they need to be doing, like changing how they spend their money or whatever. And so it's just like this really funny thing.
Yeah. I think for a lot of white people, like the idea of social media and posting and like reading other people's information can be a really helpful part of the process so that we can kind of, in some ways it feels safe, in some ways it's really extreme and cannot be safe at all, especially when there's people who have maybe differing opinions than you. But it can be like this really helpful tool to like put words together for the first time that maybe you haven't used, or thinking about concepts in a unique way again that maybe your eyes were just open to. So I think like you're saying, like on one hand there can be so much good from it, but on the other I think it can be so exhausting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So exhausting. Yeah. I also think though, like, so it's like, say you post on Instagram. I guess there are some people who think, I guess they post and they think that's enough.
Right.
And then there are people who don't do anything online and they're doing things in their personal lives and they think that's enough. And then for some people, it's probably a combination. I guess I'm trying to think through like what would be a helpful guide for people, yes. like as they're trying to figure out what to do in the midst of a racial crisis or whatever. Part of my inclination is like, do the scary thing. You know, if you're afraid to say Black Lives Matter, that's probably the thing you need to go say, you know?
Right.
If you're afraid to buy a book that features non-white children and like to have that hard conversation with your six-year-old, like that's probably the thing you need to do.
For
sure. I think that fear tends to be, for better or for worse, it tends to be one of my guides.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
This also makes me think, I was listening to a talk by one of our like friends of Plywood, his name's Nate Butler, and he was talking about this idea, and it made me think, okay, the opposite of performative activism is being authentic and being consistent. And that's what kind of Nate described. Like, he was like, this is what I want people to do, be authentic and be consistent. And I thought that was a really good like thing for especially white people to keep in their mind, is like, how can I be authentic? How can I be consistent? Although it may not feel super practical, I think it can, it's just a good thing to reference. Like when you're stuck, think about like, okay, how can I be most authentic in this moment when I see my friend who just posted this thing? Like maybe I need to check in on them like I normally would, you know, or maybe I need to have a conversation with, you know, my coworker who might have some of these thoughts too. Like, and I just think that can be a helpful tool.
Oh, yeah. I love that authenticity piece, because one thing that did happen this summer was like all of my friends, white and other non-white friends, like texting me to check on me. And it was funny. I mean, I get it, right? Like you want to know that your black friends are okay when there's horrible, scary, tragic things happening in the news.
Yeah.
But it was so bizarre when people that I haven't talked to in like a year,
yeah.
like, hey, I'm so worried about you. I'm like, or I'm so thinking about you. I'm like, you don't care about me. You don't
right.
know me.
That feels a little performative.
It's like, is this about you or about me? But then I think of someone like you who like checks in on me when you know that I'm going to have a glass of wine and watch TV all night. You still like, or like, hey, how'd that go? You know?
Yeah.
Then I'm like, okay, that's real. And so, yeah, that was just a funny dynamic also. Totally performative. I think, and maybe this is a segue of sorts. I feel like, so beyond all of the stuff happening online, and I posted about this on Instagram at one point, but I think all of the activity really sent me like inward, actually, more than anything else. I shared some stuff with the world, but it just, every time there's like a big racial crisis or something, I mean, I'm even thinking back to before I joined the Plywood team, when like Philando Castile and Alton Sterling were killed. It's just like, it just kind of makes me, it's really disorienting. I think that's the word I'm looking for. And it made me question everything, especially related to like my identity as a Black woman, my identity as a woman of like a Christian Black woman in the United States, but then also like all of this stuff I do around diversity and anti-racism, because it just makes me think, am I doing all this for white people? That's kind of a lot. That's hard. I don't know if I even like that. Am I doing this because I like feel called to, or is it just because I'm the person in the room and I'm like, I do this almost reflexively? Like, how do I solve the race problem for people? Truth be told, it's probably not either or, right? Like, it's probably a mix of all these things. But all of that compounded with just general, like, emotional unhealth is probably the best word for it. Which I'm reflecting on this a lot because I'm still very much so in a season of healing. But it's like, I don't know. I guess I've been running after a lot of things for a long time. Like, even maybe before the diversity gap started. Like, I've just been going. Launch a podcast. Figure out how to get a book deal. Write a book, lead an event, keep running the podcast, keep posting on Instagram, make sure your personal stuff is in order. Oh yeah, you want to build a house and start a homestead? Do that too with your husband. Oh, be a good friend. Oh, work full time at Plywood and do that well, which for those who don't know, we're a really small team. We do really great work and it's a lot. So I think,
And then add the pandemic add all the tensions of the summer.
Oh my goodness. And so I just kind of freaked out.
Tell us more. I think that's probably put a lot of like questions in your mind and in your like life, right? Of like, where do I go from here? What's next?
Yeah. So, I mean, I committed to like July, August, September being like months of focus on getting my internal world together. Got a therapist and a spiritual director. That was awesome. Met with her weekly. So that was part of it. I think it's been lots of hard conversations with people that I love. And the decision to ultimately transition off of the Plywood team full time. I remember it was like a random Tuesday morning. I'd been thinking about it for a while, just feeling like I can't keep all these plates spinning. Something's got to give. But it was like a Tuesday morning and I had so much peace about it. I was like, I'm going to meet with my boss. I'm going to tell him today. And so that was a huge decision, but also a really freeing one. And then with the diversity gap, big picture, I just have needed and still need time to figure out what, not what it is, but like what I want my relationship to diversity, anti-racism, and liberation work to be for this next leg of my journey. What I'm realizing is it's always going to be a part of my work. Probably like, I don't know, like it's not normal. I don't think all like 14-year-olds are journaling about the state of race in their high school and the country.
They're not. That's great.
And so it's like, maybe this is like a thing that I'm supposed to be focused on because it's been a part of my story for so long. But so I'm taking a couple months off to like just take a breather and reset and reimagine what this work looks like.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think it sounds like too, it's so you're transitioning out of Plywood.
Mm-hmm.
In a full-time capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about in a little bit how you're still going to be connected to the Plywood and Plywood community. I think too, like one of your questions for this like time of rest, because that was like over the past, I don't know, 8 months. That was like the one thing you knew for certain was that you needed rest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm curious, what do you hope for these next couple of months where you are taking a break?
Yeah. I hope that I don't fill it with stuff to do.
I'm going to make sure that doesn't happen.
That's my, like I said, when like I find that I love having a container, even though I'm like, I don't want to work full time right now. I love the structure of like someone expects me to be there at this time. Like it kind of goes, makes me feel good. But my hope is to continue some of the internal healing work stuff. Even this morning, I was thinking a lot about like imposter syndrome and how hesitant I am to like own what it means to be an entrepreneur. Because in my head, I'm like, no, white guys are entrepreneurs. Isn't that insane though? Like that, even though I know that that is not true, it's so hard for me to say, Bethany, you're an entrepreneur, stuff like that. Right. So I need to work on things like that.
That's interesting because that's definitely one of the ways I would describe you as is a like social entrepreneur. Yeah. Oh yeah, Bethany. She started a nonprofit. She started multiple projects. She You love like working and collaborating with other people. So yeah, that's definitely something, a way I would describe you.
Yeah. Oh, it's so funny because it just feels strange. And so I'm like, oh, I need to deal with that. And then, yeah, just I think part of like what's in the mix, even to me leaving Plywood, is some of those dynamics of having been the only Black person on our team for almost 4 years. Yeah. And I know that's changed and it will continue to change, but there's like a lot of just stuff to be worked through and healing needed, and
for sure.
And I need space to like let that stuff come to the surface and be worked through and not just suppress it and keep running. Yeah. So I'm hoping to mostly just become a healthy person and then to, from a place that's more healthy and rooted, lead from there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's really good. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell people where to find you?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How to still connect?
Yeah, that's good. So even though I'm taking a break from diversity gap things, including like posting online and stuff like that, I'll still be sharing on my personal Instagram account at Bethany.Wilkinson. And then I have like an email newsletter list you can sign up for at BethanyWilkinson.com. Mostly I'll be, I also have to finish my book. So that's happening. So I have to finish my book on diversity and liberation.
It's a real life thing. And I've started reading it and it's awesome.
Oh, that's so, and
so challenging. It's gonna be good for the world.
Oh, thanks, Kayla. Yeah, so people can stay Instagram, my personal account, go to my website if you want to be on the newsletter. But again, there's not gonna be a lot of activity, but you can go sign up there if you want. So yeah, and then I will be doing some freelance coaching and facilitation,
but not too next much year. Oh yes,
like next January year.
Cool.
So if you're interested in that, let me know.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, should we talk about maybe direction for the podcast?
Yeah.
What we're thinking and where it's going?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so one of the things that the Plywood team and Bethany, we've all been trying to figure out with her leaving the team, we now know and have seen it coming. There's a huge need for us to integrate this diversity, equity, inclusion work into everything we do at Plywood. So our team is working with our board, our new director of operations, and the community to keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. So this initiative is not going to stop. It's going to look different for sure, but there'll be opportunities for the community to still engage with Bethany. And our hope is in 2021 to launch season 3 of the podcast.
That's the hope. Yeah. So like interviews, but then also some fun stuff, you know, having more topical episodes where you can hear me and Kayla just talk about things. You kind of get to peek behind the curtain of our friendship a little bit because we do talk about fun stuff.
Yes.
And then community spotlights, because there are so many people in the Plywood community and in the world who do such incredible work around diversity, anti-racism. I feel like everyone kind of talks about it differently based on their context, but would love to share people who are addressing equity issues in creative ways. Yeah. And then, of course, Kayla's here as a co-host, which will be so fun to have another voice in the conversation.
I'm excited. I'm nervous for sure.
What are you nervous about?
Because I feel like I have these conversations with you all the time. I have them with my husband. I post on social media, but it feels like you said, like it feels like being a co-host to a podcast on DEI and anti-racism work feels like a big deal. Mm. Like it puts me in a position of authority, just in the sense that people are going to listen to me. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think I'm just, as a white person, I want to make sure I say things the right way. Sure. And I'm sure I won't always. And that's fine. Bethany can call me out on that, or you guys can. Or I think it puts me in a good place because I've been learning and reading and watching for a lot of years now, yeah. just soaking in as much information. So I feel like, honestly, this is a good way for me to process the things I'm learning. And it's a challenge for me, but I think it's going to be good.
Mm-hmm. I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you and I probably talked about this, like one of my pet peeves. I didn't mean to talk about the internet so much, but it's a real thing. And we've all been like not interacting with a lot of humans in real life because of COVID. But one of my pet peeves is when someone like woke up to racism like 2 weeks ago and then now they're launching a podcast on it.
Yes.
And it's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about like Black people who've been living through racism their whole lives.
Right.
I'm mostly talking about white people who are like, oh, I know this is real now. Let me teach the world how to deal with race. So something I appreciate about you is that this has been legitimate. Not that you need my affirmation, but it's been like intentional, proactive, on your own, behind the scenes work for so many years. And I just think you bring a thoughtfulness and an honesty to this work and conversation. And we've talked about this before on the podcast, but I love how you take so much responsibility for your own journey. Mm-hmm. And I don't see enough of that, honestly. Like you just take responsibility for it. And I think it's really special and important. And I would hope that you can be a guide to other people who are like, how do I do that? Not that you know everything, but you can share what you do know.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I've said this to you before too, like in our friendship, like I learn from you on a daily basis, but I would never expect you to teach me something. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a healthy boundary for people in like cross-cultural relationships. Like we've spent a long time building our friendship.
Yeah.
And again, we learn from each other all the time, but I'm not putting that pressure, or I'm trying not to put that pressure on you, mm-hmm. To expect you to have all the answers for me, because mm-hmm. enough people already do that.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I'm like, is this trauma laughter? Like, what is this?
Sorry.
No, I'm kidding. It's not that. It's not that. I know what I signed up for. Well, can you share, like, I don't know. I have here my notes, like share your how. Like, how do you even get here? We've alluded to it. But.
Yeah. A little bit about me. I grew up in a really, really diverse church community, age, class, race, ethnicity. And it was really beautiful. Mm. All the flags of all the different people were like hanging in the church and from people all over the world. And I think it was something that was really cool. Like I grew up just having all kinds of friends. And I think that was great. But recently I've kind of been reflecting back on that experience. And I realized that our church, it was great. Like we celebrated people. We never celebrated anybody's differences. Mm. We were kind of just, we're all equal. This is all a family. It's beautiful. That kind of thing, which I think what it ended up creating was just this idea of colorblindness mm-hmm. and for everybody. And goes back to that idea of like good intentions. But I know that it had a lot of impact on so many different people of color in that community. And so like the more that I kind of thought about that, I think that was a really shaping experience for me. And so I've always been like drawn and comfortable to being in cross-cultural relationships. And I think I grew up just thinking it was normal, mm-hmm. which I don't think that is actually very normal, especially for white people living, like growing up in suburbia, like that's not super normal. Mm-hmm. So I'm really thankful for that part of growing up. I think that was really influential, but it did create that sense of colorblindness.
Yeah, yeah.
That I think since then I've dissected, and the more I'm doing this work, I'm realizing for us to like keep progressing, we have to talk about our differences mm-hmm. and like truly, truly celebrate them. And that's a huge part of like what I want people to understand and be excited about, that these differences like of growing up and our like familial cultures and stuff, that it's a really good thing mm-hmm. and it doesn't have to be this huge obstacle.
Yeah.
So that's one thing.
Can I jump in and ask you something about that? Or just, I want to weigh in on that because I've been thinking about colorblindness a lot mm-hmm. lately, which is funny because I stopped. I think in my head, it was like, oh, that's racism 101. Don't be colorblind.
Right.
So I haven't revisited it in a long time. But it's resurfaced lately in some other friendships as a challenge. Mm-hmm. And I think the real, I just want to say this for listeners who don't know why colorblindness is not helpful.
Yes.
It's, I think part of it is that not only can you not celebrate people's differences, but you also can't enter into the pain they experience because of those differences if you refuse to see that those differences exist. So if I show up and I'm like, hey, someone was racist towards me today, either systemically or interpersonally, and you're like, Bethany, I don't see color. You're just my friend. Then it's like, that misses the point because I'm having a racialized experience about my race.
Yeah.
And so
for sure.
Don't be colorblind. Be color conscious. Okay, that's all. My PSA is over.
Yes. That's great. So yeah, if you fast forward kind of 15 years or so, working at Plywood, been here, like I said, for about 5 years. I'm married. I have 2 kids. They're 2.5 and 3.5. So I'm always trying to keep up, chasing them. They're chasing me.
They're so cute.
They are really cute. They're also really exhausting, but I love them. And that's kind of how the majority of most of my time is spent. It's either I'm at Plywood Place or I'm at home with my children, which is great. I'm really thankful for this season. I think the majority of this time of kind of like becoming a mom, well, kind of just growing up, like mid to late 20s, I've been really quiet about kind of anti-racism work. That's never a word I would have used when I first kind of started learning about all of this. But I've been quiet, but I've been reading and learning and listening to podcasts and reading articles and essays. One of my favorite things to read is memoirs. And I know we've talked about this a good bit, but I think that is one of the things that really, really changed me forever. The first one that comes to mind, and I'm sure Bethany has talked about it on the podcast before, is I'm Still Here, Black Dignity in a World Made for Whiteness by Austin Channing Brown. That book changed me, changed my husband, and just kind of the trajectory for our family in a lot of ways. And we made some pretty quick changes after reading that book and just like kind of promises or put stakes in the ground for how we were going to live. And for those who don't know, my son is 3.5 and he's adopted. He's Black. And some of those stakes in the ground are like, we are committed to living in the city, but not only living in the city, but living where he's around people that look like him, which might mean we're the minority in some situations. And that's just really important to us that he is in a community that celebrates his culture. And so that's something we're just like constantly thinking about and working on. That's really important. And again, that's a huge part of this work. Each day as he gets a day older and a day older, I can see the world more through his eyes. And I think see how people see him in kind of new ways. And a huge part of that is he's my son, and it's like the proximity of our relationship kind of ignites and like makes everything feel more urgent and important. And I am like on a mission to make this world a better place for him and my other friends that are Black and people of color. And I'm so committed to that.
Yeah.
Did I miss anything?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I think too, one thing that also comes to mind is my daughter, she's biological, so she is white. And it's when I think about the two of them together, many years down the road, like I think about the two of them, you know, driving to school together. Isaiah's driving, Sophia's in the passenger seat or vice versa. It's like when I see the world through their eyes, it's or how people are going to view them, I have to think about things a little differently and how I'm going to prepare them both.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful for their relationship. There's going to be some really hard and really challenging things that we have to navigate with both of them. But I think they're like just kind of forecasting for them growing up. There's so much work to be done.
Sure.
And I think I have to model that so that they can do it too.
Yeah. That's so good. It's a good segue too into how, I don't know, into just our final thoughts for this episode. But I say it's a good segue because I feel like the work you're talking about, not only your own journey, but the work of like raising these two little humans that are very different and will move through the world very differently. It takes so much bravery, I think, and not in the sense that like, oh, this is life-threatening. That's not how I mean it, bravery or courage, but just like the willingness to show up for the task, you know, and to like do that and to invest your heart, mind, energy, and resources in creating a more liberating world for your kids and for other people's kids. Yeah. And I don't know, it just requires that authenticity and consistency you were talking about, but it's also countercultural, I think. Yeah. And that takes bravery and that takes courage. And for me, I'm thinking it takes a lot of emotional health, even for my Black friends who are listening and people of color who are listening. Just, we got to be healthy out here. And that means boundaries. And that means being honest about when we are trying to show up from a place of unhealth and getting crystal clear on what it is that we expect from white people and all this. Like, I don't know, there's just so much emotional health and presence required for the journey.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think as a white person too, there you get to a certain point in this journey where we have to take care of like ourselves too in a unique way. It's totally different than I think your experience. Mm-hmm. But once I started to like truly like feel the pain, I had to figure out how to process that. And it's really hard. A lot of times it would stop me in my tracks and I would have nowhere to go or nothing to, I didn't know what to do. And I think those are the moments when we have to lean in and really try and process it. And you might need to get a therapist to do that or find some other people you can connect with, other white people you can connect with on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Community is so important.
Yes. Yeah. For sure.
Well, friends, this has been great.
Yes.
Kayla, I'm glad you're here.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here.
Good. For those of you, I think this is coming out on October, what's today's date? Maybe it doesn't matter because y'all are listening to 15th. This whenever you're listening to it. Today's the 15th. It's coming out a little under a week from now. And it's still before the 2020 election.
Yeah.
So, Kayla, you put vote in all caps in our notes.
Yes. This is our call to action today. Go vote. Be authentic. Be consistent. Go vote.
Go vote. Make a plan. Yes. Vote early. And I don't care how you do it. Just show up at the polls. As I've been like preparing to vote this season, I post this on Instagram today. It's been actually a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, stressful.
Sure.
It is stressful. Don't get me wrong. The world is, it's a whole lot. But it's also been really empowering to know that, okay, this is one small thing I can actually do.
Yes.
That will, I don't know, that matters. I don't know how much of a difference it makes. I'm still just parsing that out. But it matters. It's so important. And I think in a season where it's easy to feel disempowered by all the things that are outside of your control, like, to do the research and make an informed choice about who our elected government officials should be. I don't know. It's just been really great.
Yeah, I agree. I think it makes a difference. I guess at least I'm hopeful
I'm a little
that
bit
it
of a
does.
Cynic. I know. I'm hopeful it does too.
Yes. Yeah. And I think too, maybe you can't vote in this election, but go register for the next one.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Make it happen.
Cool. Well, thanks, listeners. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being a part of this journey, for being gracious with, especially with me, as I've been trying to figure out my whole life this year. But if you resonate with that, know that you're not alone.
Yes.
And it's okay. And yeah, I'm looking forward to all that's to come. So have a really wonderful end of the year. And hopefully we'll catch you back here in 2021.
See you then.
Thank you for listening to the Diversity Gap Podcast. If you've been challenged or inspired by what you've heard, please rate and review the show. You can also subscribe to make sure you never miss an episode. If you have thoughts or questions, I'd love to hear from you. Connect with me at thediversitygap.com or on Instagram at @thediversitygap. The Diversity Gap Podcast is recorded on Muscogee Creek land in Atlanta, Georgia.